Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson, and we're set as usual with our Sunday morning show. Remember that the White Sox will wind up their series today at home with Cleveland, and then they go on the road. In the meantime, the Cubs have a very, very big game with Cincinnati today, and then they come back to Wrigley Field. And that division race that the Cubs are involved with, the Phillies continue to lose, and let's hope they do. But the Cubs have to put together a winning streak. One game at a time won't do it. They've got to win like Pittsburgh did. They finally lost a game, but they put together a real good winning streak and moved up very, very close. And that's what the Cubs need, and let's hope they can do it. You know, the heavyweight championship fight is coming up next month, 15th of September. And our guest today, an old friend, Ben Bentley, has been perhaps more than anybody I've ever met closer to the fight game, and has followed the fight game and has known all the fighters, perhaps more so than anyone I ever met, and that includes all the sports writers. So we'll talk about the fight and the fight game with Ben Bentley, and he'll be our guest in just a moment. We're delighted with the approach of the heavyweight championship fight to have Ben Bentley as our guest today. Ben, I've often wondered, and maybe I've asked you this before, but I still wonder about it. This interest that you've had in fighters and the fight game has really been a big part of your life. I don't know anyone in the country, and I've known all the writers for the last 40 or 50 years, better informed on the fight game than you've always been.
Well, it's been a major factor in my life, both as man and boy. I've probably been involved in boxing for some 30-odd years. It was my pleasure and privilege to have worked with some of the world's greatest fighters of our time, Bob. The Ray Robinsons, the Rocky Marcianos, Bobo Olsen, and I can run the gamut with all of the fighters that I worked with. And worked with a fighter called Hurricane Jackson, who I enjoyed working with tremendously. And boxing was very, very good to me, but boxing was extremely good to my family. So I've always had a fondness and a strong tie to the world of boxing.
What about Barney Ross and BoJack?
Barney Ross and BoJack. Now you just took two great names out of the past. Barney Ross, undoubtedly, was one of the great fighters of all time. You know, recently, the people in New York labeled Ray Robinson the greatest fighter of all time. I loved Sugar Ray Robinson, but labeling him as the greatest fighter of all time, I think they stretched a little bit because they forgot the Barney Rosses, they forgot the Tony Canzonieris, they forgot the Joe Louises, they forgot the Jack Dempseys, and I could go on down the list. I do not want to demean Sugar Ray Robinson, and there was another great fighter in his class called Benny Leonard. And again, I say I don't want to demean Sugar Ray Robinson, but the writers must have been of the new breed when they named Ray Robinson as the greatest fighter of all time. He certainly was a great, great fighter. In my time, I would say he was truly a great fighter because, Bob, he could blueprint a fight quicker and better than any fighter I ever saw. He knew after three rounds every move that you were going to make. And when he got ready to throw a left hook at you, he was deadly because he hit you directly on the chin, and he positioned you. He moved you into position. He was absolutely one of the truly great fighters that I had ever been associated with.
I agree with you. What about that left hook that Joe Louis used to throw?
Joe Louis threw a left hook, and if he ever hit you with the left hook, believe me, you were on the Boulevard of Broken Dreams for about 10 years after that. And I saw many a fighter get up and didn't know where they were at. I forget the fighter here in Chicago that he fought. The name escapes me. And he fought him here in Chicago and hit him with that famous left hook. And the fighter did not revive himself until after he took a shower and he was sitting there putting his clothes on and said to his manager, "What time is the fight start? Shouldn't we get down to the arena?" And didn't know where he was at. And this is a very true story. Joe was very worried about him, you know.
I thought Joe Louis was one of the real class guys that I ever met in the fight. I don't think he ever struck a foul blow. He gave everybody a shot. He was really a great champion.
I worked with Joe many times. He, exactly what you said. He was a great, great champion, especially when he had the original trainer, Jack Blackburn, who taught him everything that he knew. I mean, he was scared to death of Jack Blackburn. And Jack Blackburn, he called him Chappie. And when Jack Blackburn would just look at him and say, keep that left hand high, keep that left hand high, he would listen to him. There was no arguments. There was no second thoughts. He did what he was supposed to do. But Joe was a gentleman all the way around. And as good-hearted, that's why today he probably doesn't have a lot of money. I visited him in May in Las Vegas, Nevada. He wouldn't take any call, but he did take my call. And I went over to see him, and he's in a wheelchair now. And he has nurses around the clock. And we reminisced a little bit about Chicago. And he said, when you get back to Chicago, he said, tell everybody Louis is doing great. So he's still got that courage. Marvelous.
Wonderful. Do you remember the two fights with Schmeling?
Oh, very well. Very well. The first one, of course, he got knocked out. And he got hit with that right hand, the sneak right hand, and he was forewarned. He was forewarned by his entourage, and he was even forewarned by the Schmeling people that he was going to try to hit him with that sneak right hand. And Schmeling in the first fight saw that opening, hit him with a right hand. He never recovered. He fell down. He got up. He lasted another round or two, and he was out. But the second fight, I don't know if a lot of people remember that. It's the only time in my career that I ever heard a fighter scream in pain. And that was Max Schmeling when he got hit from Joe Louis. Joe Louis hit him a left hook up against the ropes in the ribs, and the man in the ribs and in the back, and Schmeling actually screamed with pain, screamed. His mouthpiece flew out, and he screamed. I'd never heard any other fighter ever scream. I could see looks on their face that they were hurt, but never screamed, because he was going to take that fight back, and he did. And, you know, and that was at the time that the Nazis and the, he was the symbol, Max Schmeling, and they involved all of that in the fight, and Joe Louis was getting all worked up. He was going to show that the Americans were still the great fighters of all time. Oh, that was something with Schmeling.
You're too young, I think, I know you know about it because I know how you have followed fights even that weren't part of your time. But one of my closest friends was Jack Kearns, who managed Jack Dempsey. And, we used to have breakfast together down at Henrici's on Randolph Street about 4 or 5 mornings a week. And Mike Todd, who married Elizabeth Taylor, had an office across the street. He was selling Christmas tree ornaments. He used to be there with us. And Joe Sherman's brother, Danny Goldberg,
remember Danny?
Very well.
Yeah. Well, they were both broke at the time, and they dreamed up taking the Mikado on the road and call it the Hot Mikado, and that's where Mike Todd got his stake. But the point I was going to make was about Kearns. He was telling me about the Dempsey-Willard fight at Toledo on a hot, sunny day. You remember that story?
Absolutely. When you mention Jack Kearns and you say to me, I don't know if you remember, I owe everything that I have in boxing to the late Jack Kearns, because it was Doc Kearns, as we fondly called him, who took me out on the road for the first time. He went to the late Jim Norris at the stadium and he said, I want to take this kid with me to St. Louis when Maxim was fighting Archie Moore. He said, this kid reminds me to throw back of the old days. I learned more from Jack Kearns than I learned from anybody else about publicity. He could take people, well, he could take Bill Veeck and put him in a corner and buy him, sell him, and buy him back again on time payments. This was the greatest promoter of all time that I saw. He'd walk into Henrici's, and he knew the maitre d', and he'd tap the maitre d' and say, John, who's sitting there we can rob today? And he was just magnificent. And as I say, to me, he was the granddaddy of them all. He took me on the road. And I owe a great deal to Jack Kearns.
On that hot day at Toledo, Jack Kearns bet $10,000 against $100,000 that Dempsey would knock Willard out in the first round. Now, the happening in the first round would have given a lesser man a heart attack, because Willard went down 7 times in the first round and kept getting up all the time. And Kearns is praying he's going to stay down, he's going to win $100,000. that he got up for the second round and he blew that $10,000.
Yes, that story Jack has told many, many times, and he's also, well, he had a wealth of stories to tell. But I remember that story in which he told to several newspaper people about that particular fight. You know, there's a sports columnist in town that's now retired, Warren Brown, somebody that you and I know very well. And Warren Brown was writing sports in San Francisco, and he remembers, he used to tell me, he remembers the first time that Kearns came up with Dempsey. Dempsey was a four-round fighter, and Warren Brown was on his way out to have lunch, and Kearns said to him, "Warren, I want you to meet the next heavyweight champion of the world." And Warren Brown said, "I'm a little busy. Talk to you some other time. I'm hungry." And that was the first time he met Jack Dempsey. And, you know, they cut up, I think they cut up $6 or $7 million between them. And in the later years, of course, they never talked. They stopped talking. And the first time that they ever said hello was in St. Louis. And Harry Carey had a radio show at that time. And we were going on, and Kearns was going on, as was Dempsey. And we came into the studio, and Dempsey had just gotten through talking to Harry Carey when he saw Kearns in the lobby, and he said, "Hello, Doc." And Kearns says, "Hello, Jack." Now, that was the first time they talked in some 30, 35 years. And that was on that. And incidentally, I was warned about Harry Carey. They said to me, "Are you putting Kearns on the program?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "I got Joey Maxson with me too." He said, "Watch out for this Harry Carey. He's a hatchet man." "Oh, we gotta watch out for this guy." And I've told it, of course, I mean, I remember Harry Carey a lot, you know, sooner than a lot of people here do. And I've told Harry Carey the story, and he remembers that. And he said, "I didn't hurt you, did I?" I said, "No, except one thing, we didn't get paid."
Knowing all the great fighters that you have, and we're talking about heavyweights because of the coming up very soon, the heavyweight championship fight. How would you say, with the heavyweights, I know how close you were to Marciano, who I loved. I know how close you were to Lewis, who I thought was one of the greatest fighters that ever lived. How would you compare Muhammad Ali with these great fighters? Let's say when he was champion.
When he was champion, if he was fighting a Rocky Marciano, take my word for it, in the late rounds, Marciano would paralyze him. Marciano would hit him on top of the head, on top of the arm, underneath the heart, and you would absolutely get paralyzed. Marciano could take one of the greatest punches I ever saw. In the early rounds, Muhammad Ali would move him around, jab him, move him around. But in the late rounds, he had the greatest recuperative powers I've ever seen of any fighter, Rocky Marciano. And he would catch up with him in the late rounds, and he would hurt Muhammad Ali, and he would knock him dead. Joe Lewis would stalk him. Joe Lewis would move around and just stalk him, just keep that left hand out. And the first time he threw a right hand, it was goodbye, Charlie, how have you been?
Well, it's really something, these guys. The big fight now between Spinks, Leon Spinks, and Muhammad Ali is coming up September the 15th, and we want to talk about that. And we'll be back with our guest, Ben Bentley, in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have Ben Bentley, one of the country's outstanding fight enthusiasts and experts, as our guest today because the fight is coming up. We've been talking about Rocky Marciano, who we both knew well. I didn't have the good fortune to know Rocky as well as Ben did, but he was something. As you know, he died on an errand of mercy. Same way with Roberto Clemente of Pittsburgh, one of the greatest ball players that ever lived. I put Clemente and DiMaggio right up at the top of my list. They were the greatest ball players I ever saw. You remember them both.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anybody would ever give you an argument about Clemente or Jolting Joe DiMaggio. Marciano, I started with Marciano the night he knocked out Jersey Joe Walcott in 13 rounds in Philadelphia.
Remember that belt in the stomach?
Well, I remember something more important where his eyes, they put something on the gloves of Jersey Joe Walcott, a liniment, and this got into his eyes. And he kept coming back after the sixth and seventh round, and he said, "I can't see," and his eyes were very teary. He said, I can't see. They're putting something on the gloves. And he says, it's got a terrible odor. I remember sitting there and listening to him. And they were trying to wash his eyes in between rounds. And he hit him a right hand. That picture won an award, by the way, where the face of Jersey Joe Walcott was completely contorted, you know. And he won the title that particular night. And, of course, when he came back to Chicago, he took him out in one round because I think Jersey Joe Walcott realized that he threw everything he ever had against Marciano, and there was no way, unless he walked into the ring with a machine gun, was he going to win that fight. And he took him out in one round. And being with Marciano gave me some of the most pleasant moments of my life in boxing. Very charitable. And as I say, when he died doing somebody a favor, flying from Chicago to Iowa to appear at a banquet in a small little plane. And he went down, and I got a call about 3 o'clock in the morning. And right now I'm a little choked up. But he was extremely kind to me. And in training, he said one thing to me that always sort of stuck in my mind. The manager would say, Rocky, you know, you got to be a little careful today. We haven't got too many sparring partners. You hurt so-and-so, you hurt so-and-so. Take it easy. And Marciano would say, I take it easy with nobody. He says, we're paying them. I'm fighting for the title. I take it easy with nobody. And then he'd say to me, you know, we'd walk into the gym together and it'd be a crowd of people and he'd look at the ring. And he used to say something very, very significantly. He says, you know something? There's my place of business. He says, some of these people are cloak and suitors. He says, and some of these people, he said, own shoe stores. Some of these people work in offices. When I walk in here, this is my place of business. This is where I make my living. He says, and no manager's going to tell me to take it easy.
Those are wonderful recollections. Ben Bentley, who should win the Muhammad Ali Sphinx heavyweight championship fight? Who do you think will be the favorite? And who do you really like in the fight? What do you think the pattern of this fight will be?
Well, I like Muhammad Ali. I think his training pattern for this particular fight is entirely different than it was in the first fight. I think he sold Leon Sphinx very, very short, fighting a kid with 7 fights, and figured that he would the fact that he stepped in the same ring was going to scare Sphinx. Remember, he gave away. He gave away, Muhammad Ali gave away the first 7 rounds, which he never should have done. Second of all, it's a matter of pride. He wants to be the first in history to go down to win the title 3 times. And sometime around the 10th or the 11th round, I think that Muhammad Ali is going to stop Leon Sphinx, because he's really going to turn it on.
You know, Sphinx actually, people wonder about his background. What were his credentials originally to fight Clay?
Well, the heavyweight division had such a lack of talent, and he, of course, had won the Olympics, and they thought it would be a terrific thing. Here's this young fighter come out of the Olympics, a champion, won 7 straight fights. Be a good thing to go in with Muhammad Ali. And that was the circumstances of fighting Muhammad Ali, which was wrong on the part if I had Sphinx, believe me, I don't take no Muhammad Ali. He got lucky, but I would have never taken a Muhammad Ali. I'd have waited another year or so until Muhammad Ali, who's 36, would have been 37, 38. He says, then I'm ready to take the guy. But I wouldn't have taken him. His managers did take him, and they got lucky with him.
What's going to happen to the heavyweight scene when Muhammad Ali retires?
Once he retires, I think you can hang a sign out gone fishing, as far as the heavyweight division is concerned, because the only one that I can see on the horizon that shows a little bit of a spark and then has not got the charisma would be Larry Holmes. He's the one that defeated Kenny Norton. Outside of that, once the Muhammad Ali retires, we can forget about the heavyweight division. There is nobody around that's explosive, nobody around that can excite the imagination of the public. And as the heavyweight division goes, so goes boxing. So the picture's not very bright.
Ben Bentley, where were you the night of the Tunney Dempsey fight?
Tuned to a radio, to the second one that took place here in Chicago, on a back porch, on the third floor.
You must have been a young kid then.
Oh, very young kid. And I remember everybody listening to, there were some neighbors, and they had a radio, and it was at Soldier Field, and I was listening to this fight. And for some reason or the other, I rooted for Jack Dempsey, and I had no idea why. If you ask me why, I rooted for Jack Dempsey, and I remember how brokenhearted I was when Tunney won the decision here in Chicago.
The night of the long count. That has to be one of the most memorable fights that it was ever staged.
Yes, and Dave Berry, if you just read recently, died a broken man. He was the referee, and he was never forgiven by the boxing fraternity, by many sports writers, as the long count and the way he handled it. And he opened a tavern for a while, never went well, and everywhere he went, somebody would always rib him, or somebody would get very serious with him about the long count. And as I say, he died of a broken heart.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that story. You know, one of the mornings that we were having breakfast with Jack Kearns, who, as you know, loved to just talk about the fight game as soon as he sat down, I said to him, Jack, who was the greatest heavyweight you ever saw? And he didn't hesitate a second. He said, Jack Johnson. He said, Jack Johnson would have beaten anybody. He said, who was the greatest all-around fighter you ever saw? He said, Sugar Ray Robinson. He said, who was the greatest little man you ever saw? Barney Ross. Well, your thinking kind of goes along those lines, too.
Exactly. Barney Ross, personal friend, God rest his soul, was a great fighter. When I say a great fighter, he took a Tony Canzoneri twice. And Canzoneri was a deadly puncher. He took Tony Canzoneri here in Chicago, beat him in 10 rounds. They went back to New York. He beat him in 15 rounds. He then said to his manager, get me Jimmy McClernand. And his manager said, what do we want with McClernand? He knocks out all the Jewish fighters. We don't need him at all. And he said, get me Jimmy McClernand. He said, if you don't make the match, I'll make it myself. And he said, look, he says, you're a lightweight. What do you want to fight for the... Well, he says, I want Jimmy McClernand. Well, to make a long story short, the late Sam Payan made the match. And that fight, incidentally, put Mike Jacobs in business as a promoter. And they went in there, and Barney Ross fought him 15 rounds, beat him the first fight, lost the second one, come back and beat him the third time. And once he ended that myth about the Jewish fighters getting knocked out by Jim McClernand, he loved to fight the Jewish fighters because he took them out in one or two rounds.
What about the last fight of Barney Ross? He fought a great fighter who said he hated to hit him anymore.
That was Henry Armstrong. And in the last fight, about the seventh round, both Art Winch and Sam Payan, the manager, said, Barney, let's stop the fight. There's no way you're going to win this. And he said, if you ever stop the fight, I'll never talk to you as long as I live. I'm going out the way I came in. And he said, this guy's not going to knock me out. And he took probably a terrible beating, but he was on his feet. He was on his feet. And for the 15 rounds, and Henry Armstrong finally turned around about the 12th round, and he threw his hands up to the audience as if to say, I don't know what more I can do with this guy. This guy, in other words, he won't go down. I can't stop him. And he threw his hands up in the air. But he was licking him now for 6 rounds. And Barney was old at that time. Barney was already slipping. And after the 6th round, Mr. Armstrong went to work. A great fight.
Yeah, it really was a great fight. And it was a courageous ending for a great little fighter, Barney Ross. Our guest today, a real expert in the fight business, Ben Bentley. We're delighted to have him as a guest. We'll be back in just a moment. We're delighted to be talking with Ben Bentley here today. The fight game is not his work. He works for my good friend Ed Kelly at the Park District, where he does an excellent job. Ed Kelly, as you know, is a very responsible job. He does it very well. He's been our guest here a number of times, and it's always a pleasure to talk with him. Whatever happened to Tunney after the long count? He'd kind of dropped out, didn't he?
No,
he married a million.
He retired, and he married a young lady whose father owned Johnny Walker.
And Postal Telegraph.
No, Postal Telegraph, Irving Berlin married
her daughter.
Clarence McKay was his name. And Tunney walked away with $990,000, I believe, close to a million for his end. He married this very wealthy society girl. Of course, his son today, you know, is a senator, or had been a senator, And he just walked away from the fight game, that's all. The last time I saw Gene Tunney was at an affair, and we were there with Carmen Basilio, and he walked over to Carmen Basilio, and he said, "I don't think you know me. My name is Gene Tunney." And he looked up at him. He said, "Well, I heard about you." And he said to Carmen Basilio, he said, "I think you're a real, real good fighter, and I admire you, and I just wanted to meet you." He came out of the crowd to say this to Carmen Basilio, and Basilio, in turn, introduced me to Gene Tunney. So that was the occasion I had to meet him.
Ben Bentley, thank you for these wonderful recollections and these great stories. I know that our listeners have enjoyed it as much as I have, and good luck to you and your main concern, your work with the Chicago Park District, and give my very best to Ed Kelly.
I most certainly will, and thanks very much for having me.
Remember, today the White Sox are playing the final game of the series with Cleveland. Try to get out and see that game. The Cubs will be on radio and television from Cincinnati. They still have a big chance, but they've got to put together a winning streak to go someplace. Anyway, have a nice day, whatever you're doing. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.